Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 7th day of April, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will be here, too. He'll help us look at the cash grain situation on the ground in East Central and Southeast Central Illinois. He's from Windsor, Illinois, and makes his way around the planet with Channel Seeds. And as we close out our half hour together, we'll discuss, speaking of the planet, conditions on the ground for corn production in Brazil with Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather in Chicago. He has some real concerns about the second crop or Safrinha corn that's being grown there now. And that all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were a bit higher, 361.5. The final trade in the May contract up 3.5 cents. July at 364, up 3.25. And December at 374.25, up 2.75. Next year, March at 384.25, 2.75 higher. Soy complex lower for the day. May contract down 3.5 cents at $9.45. July at 912.75, 3.25 lower. And November beans at 919.5, down 2.75. Bean meal futures at 266.80, down 1.10 for the day. And the bean oil at 34.10, 16 cents lower. Soft red winter wheat on the afternoon at 457, down 6. The July or the harvest month for the day, that finished in 5.25 lower at 464.5. And the July and the hard red at 465.5, down 6.75 for the afternoon. Taking a look at what's been happening in the livestock, nearby contract for the live cattle at $132.20, 12.5 cents higher. April feeders at 55 cents higher, 153.72.5, and the lean hogs for the day are down 42.5 cents at $67.07.5. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on this Thursday afternoon. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming not long after it airs on our radio stations, from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
Some of the outside markets now. Nearby crude oil trading at $37.31 a barrel. It's down 44 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.50 and 6 tenths of a cent. That's 7 tenths of a cent higher. The wholesale price of gasoline at $1.38 and a tenth is 1 penny and 3 tenths lower. Diesel fuel down 1 and 4 tenths at $1.12 and 6 tenths. And natural gas at $2.08, up 1 penny for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,404, 224 points lower. The U.S. dollar at 94.5. That's up 0.059. And the gold futures on the day at $1,237.70, up $15.20. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. Mostly cloudy today, a high of 48 degrees. It'll be breezy out there with the northwest wind at 17 to 20, gusting to 30. And then tonight, a slight chance of rainfall after 2 a.m., mixing with snow after 5 a.m. Mostly cloudy and a low of 33 overnight. North-northwest winds will bring us those cold temperatures at 8 to 13 miles an hour, turning light and variable during the overnight hours. Winds will gust, though, as high as 22. Chances of precipitation overnight at 20%. Tomorrow, a slight chance of rain. Snow showers before 8 a.m., then a chance of showers. Mostly cloudy, a high near 47 degrees tomorrow. Breezy with a west-northwest wind at 8 to 13, gusting to 20 to 25 in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high all the way up to 36. Chance of precipitation during the day tomorrow set at 20%. More on the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It is the 7th day of April. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Dan, it's going to be cold here tomorrow. I suspect you have better conditions where you are.
Yeah, we're 80s here for today and tomorrow, but I do think we're going to catch some of that cooler weather later on. But for the most part, it's been cool down here, just like up there. But it's we're wearing shorts and we're doing yard work, and corn is knee high, so things are going okay for us down here.
What do you see in the marketplace, or maybe we can talk about it on a weekly trade, since the prospective plantings report has come out, and how well the market has handled that report, especially for corn, and technically where it stands today?
Well, I think a couple things is since we kind of have seen a decline in the South American crop. Now, it's probably debatable how big that South American crop, soybean crop, is, but it is shrinking some. And demand for soybeans have been probably a little better than what people had expected, at least through the winter months. The market has kind of moved into a situation after the acreage report that is trying to halt the big increase in corn acres that the government reported, and maybe increase the exports or increase the acres into soybeans. So that has kind of been the function of the market, where you have seen the corn-soybean ratio actually go back to this 2.5-1, which is basically a neutral area. But I do think after that report, the big acres in corn did shock a lot of people and probably did make some people rethink what their acreage mix is going to be. And my suspicion is that we've lost a few corn acres, and maybe we've picked up a few bean acres. And you've kind of seen that the way the market has reacted basically since the report, where corn, December corn futures have kind of retraced about 38% of its decline that it had there, you know, just before the report. And then the day after the report, we had a low down here around 64 or so. Now we've back retraced about 38% of that. On your old crop corn, we've retraced about 50% of that. And that's being driven, I think, mostly by still strong domestic demand. The ethanol plants are still wanting to pull corn into the pipeline. Export demand has picked up some since the dollar has been on a decline. So that pretty well has halted whatever bearishness we saw out of that stocks report here a week ago, and now we're just kind of waiting around now for the growing season to really get underway. There's really, from what I can look at, there hasn't been a lot of progress. The south has been too wet, or the delta regions have been too wet, and the north has really been too cold and too wet. So we're now getting into the growing season, and now we have a lot of uncertainties of, you know, will all of those corn acres get planted? And if they do, how many will get planted? And same way over on the soybean front. But and then in the backdrop, we have a weaker dollar, and we've got a shrinking South American soybean crop that might spill over and see a shrinking corn crop. And anytime you see those two factors come into play, the market is going to have to react to it, because the market priced in those big crops out of South America during the month of February and the first part of March.
Most of our analysts have been of the mind on new crop for corn, just to hold the line, and for soybeans that the prices had rallied enough that they'd be willing to make sales, and certainly for old crop soybeans to make sales. Do you differentiate from that?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily differentiate from it. I mean, you know, based upon what we knew after the USDA report and new crop soybeans, a lot of elevators, I suppose farmers did have an opportunity to lock in some $9 cash soybeans, and especially if they were going to move their acreage mix. If they were going to move their acreage mix because of the report and maybe plant more soybeans and less corn, the $9 cash bean, or at least some kind of defensive measure to protect that $9 cash bean bid with a minimum maximum contract of some kind, or, you know, just about all of your grain elevators now offer some form of these derivative contracts. So there was a way to at least to maybe to defend the $9 level type on beans and still keep the door open for a move higher if we do get into weather problems. Corn, there really wasn't a whole lot to do with prices down underneath the insurance average. So I guess my stance would be pretty similar to what the other analyst was just to stay patient on corn and kind of see how the planting season goes. But we have now regained some of that. But the sources that I talk to is, you know, with the funds so big a short in the corn market and the general demand tone for old crop corn has been fairly firm, that the corn market really wasn't going to fall apart yet anyway. I think if the corn market is going to fall apart, it's probably going to be a little later down the growing season. Once we get the crop planted, and we'll see how the growing season goes. But, you know, like I mentioned up at the beef house, we do have very low sunspot activity going on, and that lower sunspot activity does favor cooler temperatures as we go through the growing season, and I think so far that has kind of bared out. So I'm looking for a cooler summer, and we may end up maybe be cool and dry yet before it's over with. They are telling me that the El Nino La Nina cycle is now favoring going back to cooler waters, and that may stir up some dry weather later in the growing season.
And certainly, if we get to that La Nina area, it will impact what happens in South America far more, most weather guys will tell us, than it ever does here in the United States. And we'll look forward to maybe some difficult problems there in trying to negotiate our way through that. Any other final word before we let you go? And, hey, looking forward to having you on Commodity Week this afternoon.
Yeah, too. We'll be on Commodity Week, and we'll expand some on other areas what I'm looking at.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joins us here on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. He will join us on Commodity Week, and that'll happen at about 3 o'clock this afternoon. We'll put that up on the website at willag.org by about 5 o'clock this evening. In today's agricultural news, as the ag economy continues to struggle under the weight of low commodity prices and decreasing land values, farmers are looking to find ways to cut expenses and to weather the current downturn. One concern for ag retailers is that farmers will cut costs by choosing cheaper seed and by reducing how much fertilizer and crop protection products they purchase this growing season. As ag retailers look to plan for their financial future, new research conducted by Millennium Research and commissioned by J.L. Pharmacus could help them prepare for the extent to which growers are reacting to low commodity prices. In the study conducted in February, farmers shared what strategies they plan to employ to survive the downturn in 2016. Among the findings of the Farmer Speaks study are half of the farmers surveyed are seeking off-farm employment, 74% will switch to generics or change brands of crop production products. No new equipment purchases will be made by 37% of the farmers. Reduced traits in seeds and changes in fertilizer practices appear to be significant. And increased attention to marketing aims to raise revenue through better pricing. Findings represent a significant change in how farmers have been doing business. Bill Pharmacus, president of J.L. Pharmacus, said that shifts of this magnitude have not been seen since the 1980s. The initial study was conducted with 160 growers, primarily in the Midwest, but also with farmers from other agricultural areas around the country. A follow-up Farmer Speak study is being planned with Millennium Research with an expanded farmer panel later this year. Let's take that study and put it into context as to what might happen in the broader economy. A new study finds the fertilizer sector contributed more than $162 billion and more than 500,000 jobs to the United States economy just 2 years ago in 2014. The Fertilizer Institute announced the economic impact study this week that the organization says quantifies the fertilizer industry's contribution to the U.S. economy. The study conducted for the Fertilizer Institute by John Dunham and Associates includes the direct contribution, supplier contribution, and downstream impact of the entire industry, from manufacturers to wholesalers, retailers, and goods and service providers. The results found the fertilizer industry directly employs 85,000 people who produced over $68 billion in output. The nation's fertilizer retailers alone support more than 43,000 jobs, with a total annual payroll of about $23 billion. Fertilizer manufacturers and wholesalers combined contribute another 41,000 jobs, with a combined annual economic impact of $46 billion. And finally today, we'll move out of this country. DuPont Pioneer and Origin Agritech Limited have entered into a commercial licensing agreement to develop new seed technologies for Chinese farmers. The collaboration is expected to help contribute to the modernization of China's agricultural system and improved food security, which the government has set as a priority. With support from the Ministry of Agriculture and in partnership with the Chinese Academy of Agricultural Sciences, Origin has already developed corn seeds with insect control and herbicide tolerance traits. The chairman and CEO of Origin Agritech says once approved by the Chinese government that the products will help his country's farmers fight the insects and weeds that prevent their crops from reaching their yield potential. He says, "We have cooperated with DuPont Pioneer for several years, and we're pleased to be working with them on this project." China's agricultural landscape is evolving, of course. Farmers are increasingly adopting technologies such as high-quality hybrid seed, mechanization, and data-based decision-making. By the way, Origin Agritech has applied for patents and regulatory approval in other countries, including the United States, to advance its global strategy to not only serve Chinese farmers, but also meet the needs of farmers around the world. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Up next, an Iowa Ag Investment Group plans to build the first ever corn ethanol plant in Mato Grosso, Brazil. Well, the Summit Agricultural Group of Iowa broke ground on Brazil's first ethanol plant. That happened recently. The group is partnering with Brazilian agribusiness group Fiagril to build the $115 million state-of-the-art facility in Mato Grosso. The region is a preeminent agricultural state in west-central Brazil and the country's largest producer of corn and soybeans. Justin Kirchhoff is Investment Development Manager for Summit Agricultural Group.
As we think about this opportunity longer term, given the growth and demand in Brazilian ethanol, we think the combination of this plant being the most technologically advanced corn ethanol plant operating globally, located in an area that has what we think will be the lowest long-term corn prices in the world, located in a country that has significant demand for ethanol, we think the combination of those three things presents a really dynamic opportunity.
He says the plant will be able to produce 50 million gallons per year, feeding in 20 million bushels of corn.
The most important aspect of this is we're going to be utilizing proven technology from ICM, who provided about 60% of the technology to all of the ethanol plants in North America. So what we're able to do is take that proven technology and transplant that down into Brazil and utilize the advancements in the technology that's happened in the U.S. ethanol industry over the past 10 years and put that in Brazil and operate it today.
The Iowa company's Brazilian partner, Fiagril, is a diversified company whose operations include biodiesel production, grain trading, crop production inputs, and infrastructure developing throughout Brazil. The Summit Fiagril production plant is expected to be completed by midsummer 2017. Let's talk about the cash grain segment at this point. On the line from Windsor, Illinois, is Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
I bet you would prefer to be talking to me from the cell phone in the tractor cab this afternoon, but I can't imagine you're in the field. Is that the right assumption?
It is the right assumption. We had enough rain yesterday to keep us out of the field here for a little bit yet, and of course it's still plenty cool for my liking, so at this point there's nobody around here running. Guys got anywhere from 4/10 to maybe 3/4 of an inch, depending on where you're at. So there's definitely nobody running at this point.
Were you able to work a little ground in the latter part of March?
Yeah, we worked a little bit of ground and got some spring anhydrosone, so we were able to get most of what we wanted to get done completed, and so That was a blessing. The ground was working beautiful. It really was. And I understand some guys maybe wanting to go ahead and plant. But, the ground was working right. That's for sure. We just, it's awful cold. It's supposed to be down under freezing here the next couple of nights. So
yeah, soil temps are cold, and it doesn't help anything pop out of the ground when they're that far below 50 degrees. So let me ask you just a little bit about what you think about the marketplace, the changes that took place in the prospective plantings report last week, and how producers should take that into consideration as they move through this marketing season.
Well, I think, the trade is kind of trying to tell us since the report came out that maybe they're a little skeptical about the 93.6. To me, I figured that out fairly quickly when we didn't run the market down the limit. But with that being said, even if you shave a couple million acres off, you still got a lot of corn planted this year, especially with a fairly large carryout. So as a producer, I need to probably get a good idea of what my where I'm going to set my sights. And I don't want to get too greedy with this market. I want to figure out where my cost of production break evens are, for both corn and beans, and then be pretty aggressive whenever I have a chance to, maybe to market at some profitable levels.
And for soybean?
Well, with soybeans, a lot of producers were telling me they could make $9 beans work, and we've been well over $9 here for a while as far as the node goes. In fact, a lot of guys sold $9 out of the field beans here in the last week. So that's a pretty easy place, I think, to start for a lot of producers. And if that was where your goals were set originally, I sure don't want to move it once we get to your goal.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. Looking forward to talking with you in about half an hour.
Thanks, Todd.
All right. Matt Bennett, of course, is with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. He also will join us on this afternoon's edition of the Commodity Week program. We'll put that up on the website at about 5 o'clock this evening. In a couple of minutes, I'll come back. We'll have a really interesting conversation, I know, because I already had it, with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's World Health Day and National Coffee Cake Day. The history of the coffee cake dates back to the ancient Egyptians. precursors of modern cakes were first baked in Europe sometime in the mid-17th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1727, Michael Addison was born. Addison was a French biologist who developed a system of plant classification based on physical characteristics. In 1860, Will Keith Kellogg was born. He founded the Battle Creek Toasted Corn Flake Company to manufacture cereals developed by his brother, John Harvey Kellogg. In 1869, David Fairchild was born. He supervised the introduction of over 20,000 exotic plants and varieties of established crops into the U.S., including alfalfa and soya beans. He managed the Foreign Seed and Introduction Program of USDA for more than two decades, and he was author of The World Was My Garden and Exploring for Plants. In 1884, E.H. Sutton, an African-American inventor from North Carolina, patented a cotton cultivator. And in 1948, the World Health Organization was established. The WHO has more than 190 member nations. Its mission is the attainment by all peoples of the highest possible level of health, with an emphasis on infectious diseases. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Through expert advice and tailored solutions, Busey helps homebuyers achieve the dream of home ownership. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 7th day of April. It's a Thursday afternoon. We're joined now by Mike Tenori. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Thanks for being with us, Mike.
Hey, you're welcome, Todd.
Let's start in South America. I have mentioned a couple of times on the air, and I think mostly because you've talked about it a little bit, that if things turned off very quickly to the dry season in South America with the late start to their planting last fall, which delayed, of course, the corn planting this spring, it could turn ugly fast. What are your thoughts on the Safrinha corn crop in Brazil at this point?
Well, the situation there is getting much more interesting and potentially more serious because it has stopped raining. If you look at rainfall since March 26th, they should normally receive around 1.5 inches of rain in their southern corn areas and about 3.5 inches of rain in their northern corn areas. So that's telling you that they still get significant rainfall in late March and early April. By the time you move into June, though, much of these areas receive no rain. It basically doesn't rain in June, July, and August in the northern to half to two-thirds of the corn belt in Brazil. And so since rain has already stopped, at least temporarily, this is a bit of concern because most of these areas receive very little rainfall since the end of March. Now, it did rain before that, so the first 2 to 3 weeks of March were not all that dry. But we're in the important period of development now. Most of the corn in northern Brazil was planted in February, with the later planting having occurred in the beginning of March. So more than likely, corn is beginning to soak or at least approach that silking phase. We haven't seen too much in the way of rainfall. Our bigger concern going forward is that every week is drier than the next as you go forward through May. And by the time you get to the end of May, you really wouldn't expect to see much in the way of rain.
The other area that you're concerned about is the panhandle of Oklahoma, parts of Texas, parts of Kansas, where the wheat crop came out of dormancy early, and now it's in really dry conditions, too.
Well, that's right, and the area of dryness is considerably larger than the area you just mentioned. It extends from southern Nebraska through basically the entire state of Kansas, most of Oklahoma, and most of Texas, at least as far as where the wheat is. If you look at a map of Texas, you'll look at it and see that only parts of it are dry, but it's right in that key wheat area. Our calculations we run over here show that 56% of U.S. hard red winter wheat production received less than half of its normal rainfall over the last 60 days. That's a pretty big area. That's more than half of it. As we move forward, we do have some rain that will hit there Monday and Tuesday, but those chances don't look all that great. It looks like a quarter of an inch may be limited at this point to the eastern third of the wheat belt. We're going to need to see more than that. There is another chance coming up next weekend, so 10 to 14 days from now. That could end up being the event that they really need to see. But at some point, it's going to have to rain. We can't go that long and add the month of April to this without seeing significant rainfall.
Hey, thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate you being with us.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
You too, Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. That wraps up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.